data center consolidations delivering more cost savings than the White House expected. The Government Accountability Office says by the end of fiscal 2015, agencies will save $3.3 billion, and that's $300 million beyond what OMB expected. Dave Gwynn is Vice President of Federal for Nutanix, and he says agencies may be missing out on a key detail that can drive cost savings even more. Dave, it's great to see you again. Thanks for coming in. Let's start where we always do with a little thumbnail on what you and Nutanix do for clients in the federal space.
Sure, and great to see you as well, Francis. Thanks for having me. So what Nutanix does, in short, is we make what's called converged infrastructure, and it's the evolution of the platforms that have been hosting virtualization for the last 12 years or so. And what was three-tiered architectures that I can give you details on if you care, but servers, switches, and storage that were separate components are converged into a single appliance model that eliminates a lot of layers, a lot of complexity, space, cooling requirements, power requirements as well.
Mm-hmm. You wrote a piece in NextGov recently, and I told you before we went on the air, the approach to it, I think, is interesting. The content's great, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's titled The Lego Approach to Closing Federal Data Centers. And I don't get a chance to talk about Lego much on the radio, and it's the building blocks concept behind this that I think is worth discussion. I mentioned the GAO numbers as we began our conversation, and you write in this piece, one of the main issues included agencies consolidating centers but not seeing any results, talking about where the GAO pointed out there are still challenges in the data center consolidation realm. You write, six agencies reported closing as many as 67 data centers with limited to no savings. Now, I guess that kind of defeats at least one of the purposes of data center consolidation. What was your sense as you read through that GAO report, and knowing that this is something that you help customers do, what was your sense of the reasons behind we'd close this many data centers and we haven't saved any money?
Well, you know, it's on the surface, one would obviously look at it and say, okay, we're going to close data centers, we're going to save real estate, we're going to save power and cooling. But there were significant costs associated with the anything new that needed to be purchased in the data centers that were set to remain. But there was also, there wasn't a lot of innovation as part of the shift. It was really just, hey, let's take that stuff and move it from this data center to that one so that we can shut down that data center. That recouped a little bit in terms of real estate costs, but if you think about a physical move, you therefore had to have the same real estate on the receiving end, mm-hmm. and so you didn't recoup a ton. Maybe you were using what had previously been empty space, but there wasn't any innovation that went with that. Those that did innovate frequently went with antiquated architectures, the same thing that had been used, maybe a better version thereof, but you know, faster version of the same exact architecture. Really kind of ignored much newer technologies. And with the evolution of IT right now, there are a lot of newer technologies that, you know, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, those companies use very different technologies in their data centers than what the federal government is using today.
What's the big differentiator in that area?
The big differentiator is those companies, you know, they are extremely focused on obviously profit and loss is their bottom line, but they therefore have to worry about, you know, very accurate scalability, not wanting to purchase stuff 3 years in advance and grow into it. Those companies really don't know where they're going to be in 3 years, so they couldn't predict it, you know, even if they wanted to. But also they have to have ease of management, right? They can't have a bunch of PhDs running around in their data centers. That would drive costs up in terms of operations. They have to have incredible uptimes, you know, five nines or whatever uptime, so they can't have anything ever go down. And yet they don't buy the things that most of the federal government views as quote-unquote enterprise. What they do is they use commodity hardware and literally kind of, you could just say, dumb servers, a classic x86 server with a couple of CPUs, a bunch of RAM, some disks that are directly attached to it. Mm-hmm. And those disks may have different flavors, maybe some flash or SSD, and then maybe some spinning disk. But bottom line, pretty basic, the same server we've known for 20 years, a couple of CPUs, bunch of RAM, bunch of servers. That product is very easy to manage, right? You can have very few people in the data center managing hundreds of those devices because they're so basic.
Mm-hmm.
You can maintain one set of parts for that device. Because of that ease of management, there's significant savings there. But the challenge is, how do you take what I just referred to as a dumb server and have it support the needs of a Google or a Facebook or a federal enterprise data center?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way you do that is through software. And this is where you'll hear the term software-defined data centers, right? The underlying hardware shouldn't define what that hardware does. It shouldn't say, I'm a firewall, I'm a SAN, I'm a switch. The underlying horsepower is just that, it's horsepower. You put software on top of it that defines for that product what it's doing. And Google developed something called the Google File System. Most companies, Facebook has one as well, they're all generally, they fall into the category of a distributed file system that says, I run on all these various components, and as I run on these hundreds of commodity servers, all of those instances of that distributed file system communicate with each other. They pool the resources together and more or less present them as one large aggregate. Now, in a virtualized world, you can then run the virtualization on top of that, and from the virtual machines that are running on top, they see that huge aggregate as all theirs to work with. So it's a simplified environment using dumb hardware, but mm-hmm. it looks like a supercomputer.
So what's the difference between what you see in that example and what you see, maybe not your clients, but you see some agencies in the government doing?
So, I mean, you can walk through a federal data center today and you can see one of the most beautifully managed data centers. You know, it's not a train wreck. There aren't cables anywhere, everywhere. There's you know, it's clean. It's efficient. But you can certainly walk down the aisles and identify each component.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an IT guy can. And you can say, there's the SAN, there's the switch, there's the intrusion detection system. Those are all identifiable. Every one of them, you can therefore also assume there's a person who's trained on how to run that device, who costs money, and who has to go maybe to the annual conference for that particular product and has a certification after their name, which mm-hmm. drives up their hourly rate.
Yep.
And you can also assume that because that's not dumb commodity hardware, that it's a lot more expensive. It was more expensive to buy. It's got a more expensive maintenance tail. It might have unique proprietary parts that have to be inventoried in order to have good uptime. So that's how you can identify the differences. If you can walk along and identify by the hardware what it is, you probably have a situation with high capital expenditures and high operational expenditures. And a good analogy, I don't know if you have an iPhone, but I'm holding one in my hand here, right? So
yep.
You can look at my iPhone from we're 6 feet apart, and you don't know what my iPhone is doing. I could be running GPS on this. I could be listening to music on it. I could be on a phone call or checking email. It's the software on the iPhone that's defining it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in effect, current generation data center, that's the same. You'd be walking down the aisles looking at a bunch of iPhones, in effect. You don't know what they're doing. They could be doing anything. And, in fact, they can change from moment to moment, which is also very convenient in terms of scaling and not knowing where you're going to be tomorrow.
So this is the concept, it sounds like, that you're getting at when you write in this NextGov piece. What's missing is a focus on the optimization of servers. Is that, am I on the right track?
Yeah. What we're trying to do is say, hey, don't go out and buy these huge devices. Now, you know, there's an analogy I use a lot when I'm giving presentations on the road to Apollo 13. When virtualization came out, roughly 12, 13 years ago, virtualization started to shift from being, you know, something you saw in labs and test and dev environments to being a mainstream enterprise. There were certain features that the virtualization companies came out with that made it enterprise ready. There was, VMware calls it vMotion, Microsoft calls it live migration. But these features were key in order for people to agree to run virtualized platforms in the enterprise. But at the time, when those software vendors developed their stuff, they had to look at what they had before them in terms of what can we run this on? What would be the way that we can implement these features? And what was in the data center then, 12, 13 years ago? Servers, switches, SANs. And so that's what they used. And much like Apollo 13, hey, we got to get oxygen for the astronauts. What do we have in the space capsule? Well, we've got a round tube, we've got some duct tape, we've got a bungee cord, and we've got a square filter. Okay, guys, figure out how we can put all that together to give the features that the astronauts need. Same thing we did in the data center 12, 13 years ago. But what's happened now is that 12, 13 years later, we're still acting like we're still in space. We're 12 evolutions of Moore's Law away from when these architectures were designed. and we're still using effectively the same exact architecture.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the Lego piece of this when we come back, Dave. It's great to have you here. Dave Gwynn is my guest. He's Vice President of Federal for Nutanix, and our conversation continues in a moment on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. Dave Gwynn, my guest on Industry Chatter today. He's Vice President of Federal for Nutanix and writing in NextGov under the headline, The Lego Approach to Closing Federal Data Centers. And Dave, the concept, as we've been talking about data center consolidation and you termed it optimization, you write here, think of software-defined data centers as Lego blocks. Now, I haven't played with Lego for a long time, and even my kid hasn't. So how does that analogy apply in the space that we're talking about here?
So what the analogy is talking about is we're talking about scaling. And scaling has been a challenge in the IT world. You know, it's one of the things that comes up really no matter what you're talking about is, okay, if I'm starting with X as my requirement today, how do I scale to 5X and 10X as my initiative grows and I scale it out? And the Lego block analogy is not analogous to the software-defined data center, but to the components in the data center. And going back to what we were saying in the previous segment about these commodity servers. When you have a distributed file system and it's capable of running on multiple pieces of hardware, you know, each of which is an x86 server, and saying, okay, I'm currently running on these five servers and I'm bridging together their resources, a well-designed distributed file system is going to say, okay, well, whenever you add a sixth or a seventh or an eighth server to that, when it comes online running that same distributed file system, it will kind of say, okay, I recognize that you're here. Should I loop this piece of hardware into the existing cluster? And when one says, yes, do that, instantly the resources in that cluster just grow by whatever that particular server brought to the table. You've seen it on Apple devices all the time. You know, people love it when you turn on an Apple device and all the other devices around see it and mm-hmm. can, you know, with a click of a button say, yeah, join in. And, in our case, we use that same protocol. We say, hey, there's another device, add it in, the cluster grows. By Lego blocks, though, the other thing about Legos is that they're all different sizes, right? Mm-hmm. So if you had set out to build a castle when you're a kid, you started with one or two Legos, and you maybe built the first wall and then the second wall, and you choose what size Legos you need at any given time. Nobody comes in and says, hey, tell me all the Legos that you're going to need in order to build this over the next 3 years. Rather, you head down the path, and as you're growing and as your initiative changes and evolves dynamically, you choose the right Lego, and that's the same thing with these servers. As you incrementally add, you're scaling out in that fashion.
I never thought of my kid's Lego castle as agile development before, but that's kind of what it is, isn't it? Because you can figure out this little piece, and then this little piece, and the next little piece. You write in this article, in order to continue delivering on the goals set forth by data center initiatives, government agencies are going to need to think differently, moving away from the traditional three-tiered architecture approach. And we've talked about that concept already. What do you think will have to change to get agencies to start to think differently than they're thinking right now? Because that's more cultural than it is technical or technological, I guess.
Agreed. And that's... that's the biggest challenge. I think both sides of the equation in being the federal government and the vendor and IT community, they both want the same thing. Well, I shouldn't say that. Some of the vendor and IT community wants that, right? But the federal government, I think, you know, if you read the report from GAO that just came out a couple of weeks ago where IT acquisition was added to their high-risk list, they specifically in there said words to the effect of, you know, they had asked in 2010 for all large IT initiatives to report on their progress every 12 months and to be able to show incremental growth and success milestones. Mm-hmm. That changed in 2012 to every 6 months. And that's logical, right? In other words, they're saying, hey, we want to see bang for our buck every 6 months. And that's what is coming from GAO. Now, are all the other organizations, are all agencies in federal following that? No. And I think they said something like 25%, 24% of the major initiatives were considered at risk and needing management intervention mm-hmm. To see if they were in compliance with that. But bottom line is that the federal government wants to grow in Lego fashion and wants these disruptive technologies that enable that. And a lot of, obviously the disruptive technology vendors want that, but there's a disconnect, and I think it lies in the acquisition process. And I don't think it's necessarily, someone to blame for it per se, but I think it's human nature that, I say sometimes copy and paste is a dangerous thing, right? When we see RFIs and RFPs, it is very common to see major portions of them that are copied and pasted from one that was posted 2 years ago for maybe a different location.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, this is going to be like that. Well, 2 years ago, the requirements might not have, some of these newer technologies didn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so by including certain keywords in those requirements, you eliminate the ability of the newer technologies to even compete. And so, we spend a lot of our time responding to RFIs, which by nature are asking for our input. Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you guys think of this before we put it out as an RFP? We'll respond to that and say, hey, this particular requirement, you're accidentally eliminating some serious contenders that could really accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a matter of working through the time period where the copy and paste sort of fade away and the leading edge RFPs that start to succeed, they become the ones that are copied and pasted rather than the ones that are getting a little bit dated now.
What do you think would make that process easy? Because ideally, we wouldn't have copy and paste. Ideally, we would have a new set of requirements and a new set of considerations for each one. I know that's not possible, and I know that's utopia.
Mm-hmm.
But what will mitigate that? Or is it just the passage of time, as you suggested a moment ago, where eventually the newer thinking type of RFPs will be the ones that are copied and pasted?
Yeah, I mean, it can't be the passage of time. That would be truly terrible if that was the case, right? I mean, it would be an incredible waste of taxpayer dollars, and it would prolong the effort that's underway with regards to data center consolidation and improving efficiencies. So what needs to happen is, I think, just in contracting shops, people need to literally make sure that requirements are being authored by people, starting with fresh sheets of paper, and truly where the requirements that are being posted are not vendor specific, and where, from the top down, I think people need to put that out as a requirement that, hey, I don't want anything in here that eliminates particular vendors or that's pulled from old RFIs or RFPs that we think are equivalent. But I think it does need to be dictated.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to have to say you can't do it this way anymore.
Yes, I mean, it could be as simple as folks in the contracting shops, or it could be, put into law. But, even when we've seen FDCCI as an initiative, now we see FATARA as a law, it still doesn't mean everybody's going to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it would be nice if there was some way of saying, hey, this, we have to allow for, let's all agree that we can't use the same technologies that got us into this mess to get us out of this mess. And more of the same is not going to accomplish it. And also, I think we should agree that we should take our leads from commercial entities who are driven by profit and loss and who have spent years designing amazing data centers. And we should be looking at how they're doing it. And if their architectures do differ drastically from the ones that we're seeing in the federal data centers, which they do, then we should really be given a long look at, well, what are the technologies that these guys are using? Because they're leading edge.
When you talk about the RFI process, let's go back on the timeline even before that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it strikes me that if you know what questions you should be asking or what opinions you should be asking for in that process, it'll lead to a better RFP. So maybe folks, when they're putting out RFIs, aren't necessarily aware of all the possibilities on the landscape. What's the communication process like, and how is it trending in that before the RFI time period, so that when those hit the street, you read it and you go, well, this may not even have included all the possibilities. Is that communication between agency and vendor getting better, or kind of staying the same, or maybe not improving?
It's challenging. I wouldn't say it's improving. I mean, I think there's tricks and techniques that all of us have to follow, and it's just a way of life. I mean, there have been improvements made, I'd say, over the last 15, 20 years worth, where, you know, organizations like FCEA and ACT IAC and they've deliberately merged government and industry together. People serve on panels together and get to know each other. And those types of organizations are a great way. There's the traditional ways that vendors are, you know, marketing to the agencies and trying to get their wares in front of them. But there's still a fair amount of challenge. I mean, it's a function of the FARs, where the effort for fairness and full and open competition at times can lead to people being boxed out from being able to really talk about what their stuff does. Mm-hmm. And that can railroad people down the road of doing the same thing they did last time because they just don't have new information on which to act.
Is changing that a series of minor tweaks in your mind, or is it a revamp of the FAR, or will issues, you mentioned FITARA a couple of minutes ago, does legislation like that help? What's your vision for that?
Well, I mean, I know people fall on different sides of the fence on FITARA, right? Not a lot of people don't like to be governed, and I'm not saying that I'm necessarily a FITARA advocate in that regard, but I do love FITARA for the fact that it sort of puts into law the notion that, hey, you will need to look at other stuff and you'll need to report on your progress against these improvements that we've asked for. And I do like the fact that it gives CIOs greater authority. The risk with FITARA is that CIOs can be very hard to get to. CIOs have admins that are very good at blocking vendors from getting meetings if they don't want them and things like that. So he who gets to the CIO may have a better avenue than they did before. So in a way, that could have gotten worse. So to answer your question, I think it may require looking at the FARs and asking, are we looking at the newest technologies? Are we giving them a fair shot? Or are we just being sort of railroaded by the old vendors with whom we're comfortable or we recognize the names? I don't know the exact answer on that, but I do think I would lean towards saying that it is an assessment of some, maybe an addition to the FARs to supplement and allow for disruptive technologies.